You're listening to the Home Staging Show podcast. I'm your host, Cindy Lin. This is the show where we talk about all things real estate, home staging, and selling your home to live and to sell. Welcome back to season 4. This is episode 9. Our show is brought to you by our in-house product, EcoGel, the eco-friendly St. Joseph statue home selling kit. In real estate, there's a tradition of burying St. Joseph statues for good luck. But because all the existing products on the market were made with plastic, we made an eco-friendly version named EcoGel. He's all natural, won't harm the earth. For more information, you can visit our website at www.ecogelkits.com. That's spelled ecogelkits.com. Hey guys, welcome back to episode 9. So originally I had scheduled an interview last week for today's show, but the guest unfortunately had to cancel last minute. And so I reached out to Karen Otto and Michelle Findamore, both had been on the show before, to see if they have any guest suggestions that can be on the show in a pinch. And both of them offered to step in and help. So thank you so much for Karen and Michelle. We will not be able to do today's show and next week's show actually. Without you guys. I originally only planned for 10 episodes for this season, but because both of them step up, so we now have an extra bonus season, bonus episode. So thank you both for that, for stepping in last minute. That's really super amazing. And for those of you who are familiar with the show, both of them have been on the show before, and both of them just are such great wealth of information about how to stage your house, what to watch out for if you're a home seller, industry trends, stuff like that, as well as business practices. Both of them have very solid businesses. They both started around the same time as I started. So both of them have been in this industry for a long time as well. So I'm really excited to have both of them on the show today. I'm sorry, both of them on the show this week and next week. So you'll hear from Karen this week and Michelle next week. They're actually asked and given the same exact questions to answer, with the exception of follow-up questions I may have based on their answers. So it'll be really interesting for you to see how both of them approach occupy home staging. And when I say occupy home staging, I meant if you're a home seller selling your home and you're living in the house where you're selling, that's what I meant by occupy home staging. Some people call it redesign as well, so you might hear both of these names being used interchangeably. So it will be really interesting for you, I think, to hear how these two home stagers approach occupy home staging and how their process may be different from each other. For those of you who don't know, Karen is based out of Texas and Michelle is based on Toronto. So their market is very different. So they're going to behave very differently in terms of how they approach their projects. So I think it'll be really fascinating for both, like for you to hear both sides of the stories. For those of you who are not familiar with Karen is an amazing stager out of Texas, like I said earlier. She's incredibly passionate about home staging. She's also a frequent and avid educator and a really strong voice in the home staging industry. She's held leadership roles in the Real Estate Staging Association, locally and nationwide. Her passion has always been helping people, and that really translates whether working with clients, colleagues, or peers within the industry. And she's also a avid social networker, blogger, writer, and speaker. She's a nationally recognized expert in the staging industry, and she's incredibly passionate about educating others about the power and benefits of home staging. Her work, commentary, and writing has appeared on HGTV, Fox for Good Days Dallas, The Dallas Morning News, North Dallas Gazette, Do Your Own Home Staging by Tina Parker, Ready to Sell in 30 Days by Karen Bernetti and Ann Anderson, along with Blogspots, Easing, and online publications around the globe. So without further ado, let's start today's show. So it's been a while since we last chatted. How has your market changed this year?
Well, we're still in a seller's market. I think we may have been in the seller's market or beginning one when we last spoke. There's limited inventory, so sellers still have the advantage, especially in homes under $500,000 here.
That's great. What is the average listing price of your market?
As far as average, it depends on by city here, really, because I live in Plano. Dallas is different. But I think average price per home in Dallas could be in the $300,000 to $400,000 price range, depending on the location of the home. In Plano, it's probably about the same, $300,000 to $400,000 as well. And that's kind of my sweet spot anyway. I generally work in homes under $500,000 as for the occupied home market. And I do higher price homes, but it seems to be that's the clientele that I work with mostly.
That's very cool. And what are you seeing as some of the upcoming trends for the rest of the year and for 2017?
Well, as far as upcoming trends, I mean, I don't love trends because they come in and out, but I see eclectic styling becoming more and more used by homeowners, and they're learning how to blend traditional and eclectic and vintage pieces. I think transitional pieces that can mix well in any home, whether it be a mid-century modern, a very traditional home, a contemporary style home. I think people are learning the balance between how to blend styles, which I think is great. Heirloom pieces with a history, I see them being repurposed and refashioned, like grandma's china hutch, possibly the top being taken off and the bottom being used as a TV console or an entry table. Sometimes they're painting it, sometimes they're not, but being able to keep family heirlooms and be able to use them. I also see the mixed textures still and the mixed metals still staying on trend. And I'm seeing some jewel tones coming into the market this season too, and I think that's great. I think accessories can always help kind of infuse a new life into maybe, a bland palette that somebody might have. And then something about small spaces too, and how people are kind of craving a quiet little nook or using a small corner to kind of retreat from that open floor plan that people are so loving, but they want some privacy too. So those are a few of the things I see happening, and I think they're all exciting.
That's interesting. Do you think it's because shows like Fixer Upper, that's why it's becoming popular with the trend?
I do. I think it's reaching a saturation point in some markets. The big box retailers like the Michaels, Target, Hobby Lobby, they tend to kind of follow these trends, and you see an influx of certain styles. But as you start to see it coming in, it soon goes out because people do get sick of it. I think you have to use a light hand when you're incorporating those things because it just gets old and tired after a while.
I think so. And I think by the time big box retailers pick it up, usually it's on the way out, I feel like. It's become so mainstream that then people are going to be sick of it in a year or so.
I agree. But in my market, especially in Texas, I think in southern states as well, the vintage farmhouse, rustic, eclectic style really never goes out. Mm-hmm. It's just you don't need every corner of your home having a piece of it.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like remember how mason jar was really, really trendy, and now it's all calmed down since then.
Yes. They're still great for drinking out of.
Yeah, I still like my mason jar. And so, how about real estate market? What are some of the trends that you're seeing?
Here locally?
Yeah.
Well, I see a lot of the older homes, smaller ranch style houses. A lot of the investors are going in and opening up the floor plan, which people love, but it's a challenge too when they're not furnished. And I'm getting a lot of calls, especially this summer, with homes that fit that profile where it's an older home, under 2,000 square feet, maybe 2,500 square feet. The walls have been opened and people are so challenged by what do I do with this space now that you really need to identify, what that space is used for. And when you're considering renovating a home, just don't follow what the other guys are doing. Take into consideration how someone's going to use that space, because I really feel like because everybody else is doing it doesn't mean that's the right thing to do. And I keep saying, Dallas, we have a problem in my head when we get a call for one of these houses, because it seems to be epidemic right now. I love that they've redone the homes, and I think that's great. And the wood floors are still in. The gray tones are still here. I do think that's going to trend out eventually, too. Granite and silestone and other stones are being used as far as countertops. But I just caution people to be careful about opening up walls without really understanding how that client's going to be using it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And especially every market is really different. So definitely like find out what works for your market as well before you really invest all those big bucks into breaking down walls and stuff like that.
What I'm also seeing with builders, and I think this is a national trend, is if the home is two-story, they have at least two bedrooms and two full baths downstairs. Because of our aging population, we have family members that come and stay with us for extended periods of time. And a lot of people don't want to walk upstairs. I see a lot of, you know, my age, and you know, midlife transitioning as they're buying a new home. They want a single story. They don't necessarily want that two story. And if they do have it, they want two bedrooms and two full baths down.
Yeah, I agree. I think the aging population is it's also a great niche, I think, for real estate professionals, because that's a real concern. A lot of countries are having that issue right now. There are less and less young people. There's a lot of people who are just aging. So actually, that didn't make any sense when I said it. Sorry.
No, it's true. It's really the baby boomers are aging and they have money to spend, but they also want to enjoy their homes and not feel, you know, bound by restraints or, you know, things that are not going to be helpful in helping even an older family member come stay with them. Young kids too. I mean, that families like to be on the same floor with their children. So I think the trend is to really consider as we age, how are we going to use that home? Is it going to be a forever home or is it a transition home?
Yeah. Like my mom, it's approaching 70s and she actually hates stairs now. It's like she does not want to climb any stairs as much as possible.
Yeah, I agree with her. And I'm not approaching 70, but I don't love stairs either.
Yeah. None of us do, especially when we're carrying furniture.
Exactly.
So I'm really excited to have you back on the show because I know you do a ton of occupied homes. Can you tell me a little bit about these type of projects? Like, what are some of the advantages of living in the home while you're selling, and what are some of the disadvantages and challenges?
Well, I will like to say that the occupied home market is really the majority of homes for sale. People who are selling a home are generally living in it. I think the vacant portion of it is a much smaller percentage, although we see a lot of, you know, staging projects online shared by people who are staging empty homes with beautiful furnishings. But in an occupied home, we've got to work with what the people have. And for me, every occupied home always starts with an initial consultation. There's really no way to understand how to help that client without being physically in the house. So whether it's a written or verbal consultation, you really have to kind of be present, be with the seller. And I always encourage a realtor for the first time to come along too, to understand the kind of recommendations that we make. I've actually added one of the services to my consultation list. I have the verbal, I have the written reports, and then I have something called room therapy. And with that, it's up to 2 hours. And the initial part of it is a quick assessment of the home, you know, 30 to 40 minutes of that 2 hours and maybe less is spent kind of assessing the rooms. And then we get to work. In that 2 hours that remains a part of that time, myself, the homeowner, the realtor, we can style at least one or two rooms of the home, if not more, depending on how willing they are to work. But I'm finding this happening more and more, especially as I develop relationships with agents. I've been doing this for 10 years. They can prepare them on some levels for like carpet replacement, walls being painted, and they want to utilize that 2 hours differently. So I have three services that I offer, and that one has become a very popular request to kind of hit the ground running and all hands on deck for who's there that day.
That's interesting. Do you do room therapy for people who are living, like they're not selling, but they're living the home, you know, or redo the house?
We have really tailored our market to be strictly the staging to sell side. So anyone that wants us to stage to dwell, that's really not in my wheelhouse of love. I don't love to do that. It's a lot more time involved in some cases, and I'm happy to refer that work, but it's a great revenue stream for someone who does love that and loves that aspect of it. But we really have focused so much on the staging to sell side that that's our primary market. And it just, I don't have time for the redesign and the restyling of someone's home while they're living in it.
That's great. I love that. Yeah, I love that you're very focused about your business. I think that's great. And that's why you're successful, because you know your market very well.
But it took a long time. I think people get kind of, they kind of cast a wide net and see where it sticks. And that's usually in the beginning phases of a business.
Yeah.
But for me, I quickly figured out what I liked and what I didn't like. And I am not, you know, everything to everyone. And I don't think anybody is. But when you're starting out, you kind of need to get the experience and figure out what you like. And so you'll do it all. And that's great. And they've got big teams. But I really don't have time in the week to do anything other than focus on the client base that we've established. One of the things I want to say is the common challenges is, you know, in these homes that are occupied, there's always too much stuff in many cases. Sometimes there's not enough stuff, so they need to go buy something or consider to rent. There are people that are style challenged. I mean, it's not for everybody. Not everybody loves to decorate their house or knows how to. So we kind of help them focus on what they need. I've even made checklists now for them to go out and shop for themselves if they don't want to rent. I try to package it and make it easy for them to figure out how they can do it themselves first. And of course, we can always come back and help them. But I would like to empower them to be able to do the work themselves.
That's great. I love it. I love that you empower the sellers as well, because I think they also need to have skin in the game, because I definitely have worked on project where the agent is really pushing for it and the seller is like not really into it. And it causes a lot of frictions and miscommunication.
I think that's, it's hard to convey to someone, you know, that hard conversation of what needs to be done. But if you develop a language as a stager, even a realtor who wants to give some advice to their client, you have to develop a language that's, it's not offensive, not insulting, but gives them the power and the tools to understand why these things need to be done. And I sometimes feel like a broken record because I say a lot of the same things over and over. But for my clients, it's often the first time that they're hearing it. Or they may have thought it, and this is just, you know, acknowledging what they had already thought was what they need to do. In some cases, I'm telling them they don't need to do it, and they're shocked that they didn't need to paint, you know, the pink daughter's bedroom. I don't think that's a high priority as far as, you know, the scope of the work. The main rooms are not usually children's bedrooms. So it kind of helps them in some cases alleviate some of the burdens of thinking, oh, I have to do this, and helps them focus on the things that are really going to help sell the house.
Yeah, I love it. I think prioritizing is very important when it comes to selling. There's just so much you have to do or you can do. It's just really a matter of prioritizing and also budget as well.
Yes.
I think seller really needs to invest the money into things that are really going to get return on investment, and not distracted by all these little projects that basically just another way to procrastinate in a way.
Right.
To actually do things that are hard but will get you the return on investment, like packing up your room, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your process usually like? Do you do consultation to have them do it themselves, or do you come in and do it for them? Because I think we just talked about this, but if you want to elaborate
and
more.
Just to reiterate, everyone does start with a consultation, but it's whether it's a verbal where the owner's taking notes, sometimes the realtor takes notes, or written, where I can write the report and I always take photos of the home. They get a written report within 24 to 48 hours, depending on my schedule, and they can do the work from those reports or the verbal consultation that they took notes from, or the room therapy where we go in, we assess what's going on, and then all hands on deck, we all get to work. So every home and every seller is different. I think it's important to have a standard operating procedure for these services and to develop one for yourself. I think I told you I'll be in Austin this week, and the focus of that talk is going to be the occupied home market and how to develop those processes and how to work harder or work smarter, not harder, and be able to upsell services too, because a consultation for every stager in an occupied home, even a vacant home, is like an audition. You're going there to present your case and present how you can help them. And whether you get more work out of it or not, it depends on the situation. But you may end up having a client for life out of that particular meeting. So I think it's important to be honest with them too, that my goal is really never to have to come back to make them spend more money, that I, like I've said, I want to be empowered to do it themselves. And all the realtors I work with, and I can't stress this enough for especially home stagers who are just starting out, realtors will pay for a consultation. I have rarely had an instance where a realtor won't pay for it unless they've discounted their services on some end. So agents will pay for this service. Anything in addition to that, the home seller pays for. I have some agents that pay for a bit more services too. But once they see the value in the service that you're providing, it alleviates the burden of them to feel like they have to tell the seller this themselves. They feel like you're part of a team. And really, we're all on the same page. We're not there to hurt anyone. We're there to help them make more money, to more people that come in, and in a faster time frame. So I'm not really worried whether I come back or not to do photo styling or to stage the home unless they really need it. So I never go into there saying I'm going to withhold some information so I can come back and give you more. No, they're paying me for my time. And if you don't feel you're being paid enough because they do it themselves and you could have gotten a bigger staging job out of it, then charge more. So I think anyone can do this if they're given help. I also teach. I teach home sellers, realtors. I teach other stagers how to do this because I really think it's the way to make home staging an industry standard for every home in every market. The consultation is the way to go. Not everybody can afford rentals or vacant property staging, and that to me is the smaller portion of the market. Occupied homes are hugely underserved.
I totally agree.
There's my soapbox.
And it's kind of funny because I just interviewed Michelle right before you, and she said actually similar things, like processes and systems is incredibly important. So I'm really happy that you mentioned that because I think I know the show, we have a lot of homeowners listening in, but for the new stagers who are listening in as well, I think that's really important to mention. It's like you want to start kind of defining your process early on and then kind of keep refining it. And that's really how you're going to build a business that's going to be really solid and profitable and also creates trust with your clients because you're consistent.
That is so
all
important.
The time. Yeah.
And I liken that to, and like, let's say McDonald's. I mean, you recognize the golden arches, whether you like McDonald's or not, it's not the point, but you know, whenever you go into McDonald's, you can expect the same tasting hamburger, the same, I love their sodas. They have the best sodas in the world. I don't know. They're frozen and delicious, but their fountain sodas are the best. I always know I'm going to get that same experience every time I come in. And I think it's important that even though every home is different, every home seller is different, you can recreate a similar experience, especially for the realtors who you're working with, and just kind of tailor it to that home and that seller. But if you don't develop that and it's kind of randomly done and you don't know what to expect and sometimes they do something and sometimes they don't, you know, it sets up the precedent that, well, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, but you're not exhibiting value if you cannot show the worth of what it was that you shared with that client. And really our goal is to get them to do the work. We need to get them to do some of it. And if I don't get them to do some of it, I haven't done my job.
Exactly. I agree. What are some of the things that homeowners should be aware of when they're leaving the home while the house is on the market?
Well, I actually tell them that the staging can actually make it easier to live in when selling. And I know people say, well, I can't live like this. Well, you don't. You're selling like this. We aren't going to live like this. You want to get out, right? I mean, that's the goal, to get out of the house. If you really don't want to get out, then maybe you won't do anything and you'll impede the process. But the stuff that we identified that already needs to be packed and moved out will already be done. So you're ahead of the game for moving. And the time to leave for a showing will be decreased because you don't have a ton of stuff to do at that point. So, and buyers really don't want to be reminded of any work to do when they're buying your home, because they're looking for a solution. They're looking for a lifestyle, a new, you know, dream as far as where they're going to. So your home should solve problems that their current residence is not. So we're a marketer, we're packaging a product, and we have to get them on board with the idea that you've got a huge product to sell. it's probably the buyer's biggest investment. It's also probably your biggest investment. You know, why not do something to make it worth what you're asking them to pay?
Exactly. And what do you generally recommend these sellers do when they're going to live in a home while they're selling their house?
Well, first of all, you try to disconnect as far as emotional attachment to the house. I remember crying when we had to sell our home. We were moving cross country, and you know, it's especially if my kids were born there and they took their first steps there. It can be a very emotional process for folks. But if you've made the choice to do this, you're going to have to remember that someone else's lifestyle dreams, you know, new memories are going to be created here. So try to think of the home as a product, and also treat the buyers as guests when you get a call, not unwelcome inconveniences, because we want as many people in the home as possible when you're selling.
Well, that's great. What are some of your ideas to get the home ready for open house quickly? Because I know it can be really difficult to live in a stage home. It's really natural for homeowners to kind of shift the things around to accommodate their own lifestyle.
Well, the first 2 weeks are the most crucial part of the sale. So you want to, at least for the first weekend, the first week, try to keep it as it was staged. I like to leave a checklist for them of reminders of what to do, from logging off your computer to making the beds to, you know, hiding jewelry and prescription medication. So they have that information in hand prior to ever having someone come in the house. But it's kind of like, I've heard that restoration hardware, at the end of the day, if there's scuffs on the wall, they come out with paint and they'll paint scuffs and dings in the wall so it looks fresh in the morning. So when the store opens, it looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to do with our own home. So we're not selling, you know, a $50 candlestick. This could be a, you know, several hundred thousand dollar investment for someone. So think about how you feel when you walk into a store. And if it's a thrift store, you expect it to be dirty and, you know, things randomly placed, maybe some things flying on the floor. But a place like Restoration Hardware, you're not expecting things to be that way. And you're willing to pay more for that $50 candlestick at Restoration Hardware than you would be at the thrift store for 50 cents.
What are some of the things that buyers get put off by when they tour the homes that are occupied by sellers? And what can the sellers do to prevent that?
Well, some easy things like too many personal photos. And I'll tell people too, it's like they might have beautiful family photos, beautiful pictures of their children. We don't know what phase at life or what, you know, trials a buyer might have had in trying to conceive or is going through, you know, a loss in the family. So it's best to remove as many personal photos as possible. I'm even saying now remove an overabundance of inspirational wall plaques, because I'm seeing that a lot.
Oh yeah, those are really bad.
For some reason, it just seems to be very prevalent these days. And ironically, and this is not to say that anybody that has them on their wall, this is going to happen to, but the ones I've seen the most in lately are people that are actually going through a divorce. So,
oh no.
It's not funny, but it's just like, okay, we don't need to be reminded all the time of certain things. And it's best just to remove that, because it's not very helpful to remind people of what they need to do every day. You should just be able to do it. Too much stuff. You don't want too much stuff in the home because they can't see what they're buying. If your countertops are beautiful, but they're covered with, you know, tchotchkes and cookbooks and oils and things of that nature, they're not looking at the granite. They're looking at your stuff. Same thing for rooms with beautiful views. Too many things clutter what is in front of them to purchase. So ask yourself what you're selling. And if it's not the collection of crosses that are on the wall, then remove them and let the buyer see themselves and how they're going to live in that home. Very religious and political items too, especially during this time of election season, it's best to remove it, because your party affiliation, your religious views, unless you don't, you know, want to do it, it shouldn't affect whether or not someone buys your house or not. And it can.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think also it just, people are naturally, they're going to pass judgment onto your stuff, whether you like it or not. And that can cause a destruction when buyers are touring the home. And going back to like the inspiration posters, for example, those can come across very cheesy, especially I think that show, How I Met Your Mother, remember Barney's office? It was like plastered with all these like teamwork posters. I think it's become such a joke that people just don't take them seriously and they just see something. It's like a joke, basically. It's very cheesy to do.
Right. And why spend time reading plaques when you want them to see the beautiful hardwoods that you've put in?
Exactly. And then can you tell me a little bit about your process on an actual staging day? Like, what do you do as a home stager when you're staging an occupied house?
Well, there's always a contract involved with, anything that's going to be moved or moved around, slid around. So that needs to be done first before we get to work. But preferably the client isn't home. I ask that to be in the contract, but I cannot force someone to leave their house. It is their home, and sometimes they don't want to leave. I'm essentially a stranger. Our team could be strangers to them, and they want to be in another room working, and that's fine. I know some people get very upset with the idea of someone being in the house while you're staging. However, it's their home. We should get comfortable with the uncomfortable in these cases. Since they've always had a consultation prior, unless they do the room therapy and we're there and moving things that day, then the larger items have generally been done, whether it's furniture that was too heavy to move out, whether carpet needed to be replaced, painting was done. So on the actual staging day, we're doing the tasks that are going to get it ready for photos and for showing. I treat an occupied home without rentals or enhancements with any of my accessories, basically as a photo styling day. So it's actually exciting for the seller to imagine that their house will be styled for staging like a magazine shoot. And I kind of always put it in that regard. And we're so used to HGTV shows and, house pictures and Pinterest that most sellers understand this process now. When we started out, 10 years ago, I think you and I are both about 10 years in. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think almost 11 at this point.
Well, no, there were no big shows like that. There were like Trading Spaces. There were some HGTV shows. But people have gotten so used to this that it does feel like it's going to be a reveal after the work has been done. I will involve anyone that's on site, including children. If they're there for the summer and they're up in their rooms, I'll put them to work to put toys away or straighten up their rooms, get the vacuum out, go outside and scrub some patio furniture. So give them something to do if those things haven't been done at that point. But between the seller, it could be the seller's spouse, the realtor, sometimes the realtor's spouse comes, depending on how much work needs to be done. I basically have free hands to do the work that they're paying for, but it actually makes it go quicker. They have, like you said, skin in the game earlier. And it becomes a fun process for everyone. Now, is that ideal in every situation? Absolutely not. But I'm finding more often than not that there is always someone in the house when it's an occupied home when we stage. Now, if we bring in rentals, that's another different contract, and we can still orchestrate that in a similar fashion. But we do ask if we are bringing in our own things that nobody is in those rooms while we're installing it because of liability.
Interesting. And what is your styling process like on these projects? Do you, because I remember I took a redesign course from Iris. Remember Iris when they were still alive? They teach this process where they will take all the decorative accessories off the walls and then put them in a pile in the corner of the room, and they will do the furniture first and then shop from the accessories pile. Do you follow like a similar process? What is your styling process like on staging day?
When I teach a staging class, and this is, I'm glad you brought that up, I will recommend when you start out, you do something similar to that because if you're just starting out and you don't have a system in place, I think it's great if you can follow that. But it's also very time consuming in some cases to remove everything and then rebuild the room. After 10 years, I kind of know what we're going to do based on the initial consultation. If the pre-work has been done once we get there, it's really a matter of just kind of rearranging and rehanging what's already in the room. So while that process works great when you're just starting out, if you've already had a consultation done on the home, Because I've never really gone out to give a bid on an occupied home just to stage it and us come back and do everything. It really isn't a good use of the time and the money that they're going to invest for me to pack up and move things out. So that's why I never go into a home without having seen it first and done a consultation of some sort. And that room therapy part of it, what I was telling you about, we can't get to every room at that point. We try to focus on some key rooms, and they basically get the message on what needs to be done in the rest of the rooms. But now my process is we go from room to room. We focus on the key rooms and restyle by rearranging, sometimes removing. We may have made a suggestion to leave it in the space just to keep it to see once everything else was pulled out. But it may end up coming out and just get stored in the garage. So at this point, I don't know if that's helpful for people to understand, because you have to develop that system for yourself. But I'd rather utilize the time to actually get the room staged than pull things off walls and pull things out of the rooms to rebuild it.
Yeah, I agree. It does take time. I think for stagers who are listening, it does take a little bit of time to kind of hone your system and find your groove, so to speak. Like, what's the best way for you to approach projects?
Well, that's why I always say with an occupied home, it should always start with a consultation. Whether it's an hour or 2 hours, we do up to 2 hours because I generally find that an hour is not enough. It's usually always goes into the half hour, but even the follow-up, could, you know, emails or photos that I might send, I include that in that 2 hour time frame if we've finished early. But I think it's important to identify areas for addressing prior to coming back and actually staging the home, if that's what they call you back to do.
Yeah, I never stage a home on sight unseen. I think I've heard stagers who have done that, where they show up the morning of to pull inventory. It's not something I do. I have to look at the house and kind of think about the space, like how we can best style it for the best use of budget and also stylistic decisions. So, yeah.
Agreed.
And I think you talk about this. I was going to ask you, do you move in inventory as well to fill in what's needed? But it sounds like you do.
We do, but I also have that shopping list that I give them. I've identified probably about 7 or 8 key items that many home sellers lack as far as decor, from large scale mirrors and art to, you know, brand new bedding. There's a checklist that I give them, the stores to shop at for it, and then there's a line for what room it's going to go in. So, again, I'm giving them so much information at that point that oftentimes we don't need to come back to stage it and for them to rent our inventory, because quite honestly, it costs sometimes more for us to stage and rent than it would for them to be out there buying it themselves and being able to keep it.
Yeah, I agree, exactly. And then can you talk about what do you wish the homeowners know before you come over to stage your house?
Well, I want them to know that I'm not there to judge anything that they have or don't have. I'm not there to remove them from the equation of their home, but they are selling, and that the staging is for the buyer at this point, and that anything I recommend to them is really with the buyer in mind. Because we're trying to attract them and lure them in. So they need to think of themselves as a marketer, a seller of a product. And again, to go back to that, removing the emotional attachment to the home and it being their largest asset. And it's also the buyer's largest purchase in most cases. So we really shouldn't treat it any other, like any differently than any other product on the market.
Exactly. And if the homeowner wants to put their home on the market while they're living in it, how early should they start the prepping process, and what should they do to get started?
Well, depending on how much or little needs to be done, each situation is very different. You know, I've seen homes a day before the photos were scheduled, and I've seen them a year before they're selling. So it really depends on the seller and the realtor. But I've established such a good relationship with the realtors we work with. They often know, you know, the time frame and call me in well in advance of when that home needs to be listed. Sellers really should educate themselves too and look at online comps in their neighborhood and what's trending, you know, what sold for what. But look at the house. Did they have granite and wood floors, but you have carpet and laminate? So consider what your home looks like in comparison to your neighbors. I'm often the voice of reason too when it comes to a seller who thinks that they're going to be ready by the end of the week, and I've met them on a Monday, but they really need a few weeks to a few months in order to get themselves ready. And some agents will wait for me to meet with them for them to decide when they're going to list, because they want to know what is a seller willing to do. If they want to do the bulk of the work and agree to the updates that might be recommended, then they will wait to list the home. They'll even wait in some cases to price the home, because really it's dependent on what is being done to the property. There's that low, mid-range to high price per square foot in a neighborhood. If they decide to do, you know, some, they might price in that mid-range. If they do it all, they could price at the top end of the price per square foot. If they just choose to do nothing but just maybe get it cleaned and ready and there's some updates that need to be done, then that conversation for the pricing at the lower end of the market is easier for my realtor clients.
Exactly. And what do you find challenging when it comes to occupy homes?
Well, you have to work within the constraints sometimes if budgets are tight of what's there. So that can be a challenge. And I know it's discouraging for stagers when they see beautiful photos that other stagers might be posting of before and afters of homes that new furnishings and decor were brought in. But quite honestly, most of America, most of the homes will not be able to afford that. So it's important to understand that doing something is better than doing nothing. And we can always improve the aesthetics in a home regardless of what they have. And I will say, I've been starting to use the phrase, nothing is better than the wrong thing. So it's better to leave a space or a room empty than put something in there that makes absolutely no sense. It's better to shoot it empty than, you know, with a stick of furniture and a piece of art on the wall.
Yeah, I really agree with that. I mean, it just looks like you didn't fully commit it to staging your house and you kind of did a half-ass job on it.
Right. But you have to get the seller on board too, and that can be challenging sometimes to help them understand why it needs to be done. And that's, again, developing a language that speaks to that part of the how and the why, and not to shock and overwhelm them. Some people are more adverse to change than others, so don't take it personally if they get offended and, you know, don't like what you have to say. But I think it's important that we do convey the message in a language that resonates and not insults the client.
I agree with that. Say a homeowner wants to stage a house themselves, what would you recommend?
Well, I actually helped a blog for storage.com. It was 7 pro tips for staging your own home for sale. And I have like the 7 tips laid out. The first one was take a photo of each room. A lot can be determined from looking at your photo on your computer or on your phone. It can help you determine what should be removed from the space, what might be crooked, you know, things that are impeding the flow. So take a photo of each room. I clear out small items too. My benchmark for small is a cantaloupe. So I always use that fruit as my benchmark. If it's smaller than a cantaloupe, get it out. It's visual clutter, especially in pictures. As far as kitchen decor, that was my third tip. Anything that's above the cabinets, I generally always remove. My benchmark is 18 inches from the base of the top of the cabinet to the ceiling if you want to have anything up there. But again, if you have a beautiful kitchen, in a photo, anything that's hanging over the cabinets, it just looks like a jungle. And it kind of clutters up the vision in the photo. And if you've got beautiful granite and stainless steel appliances, you want them to focus on that, not the stuff that you're displaying on top of the cabinet. So generally now I'm always taking it off. Number 4 was use large scale decor. I think it's really important that scale is proper in a space, and one thing is better than a bunch of things on the wall, unless it's a series and you can make it large. But focus on focal points like a fireplace mantle over your headboard, even in the dining room, a beautiful mirror to reflect back the art and or the space and the light. Buying new bedding and linens. I think we all can do this. You know, we all kind of wear out our linens from our towels to our bedding. So buy yourself a fresh set for when selling. You know how you feel when you walk into a hotel and it's crisp and clean and white and everything is fluffy? We love that. So why not recreate that at home? And you can take it with you to your next house. I think the outdoors are sometimes often overlooked too. So don't overlook any great outdoor, any entertaining areas. even if it means having to go out and buy some new pieces, like a couple Adirondack chairs and a brand new umbrella. I think it's important, especially in a smaller scale home, that the extended living area outside is paid attention to. The seventh tip was hire a cleaner. I think if you've never hired a professional cleaner at any point in living in your home, when you're selling it, that is essential. A clean house says I've been well cared for, and it kind of alleviates that burden of you to have to really deep clean from the baseboards to the ceiling fans, to the refrigerator. You know, people look everywhere, so I think it's a really valuable thing to do.
That's very cool. I love the seven tips. That's great.
Thank you.
And how can homeowners keep up with the staging while their house is on the market?
Well, it's going to be pretty simple. Like I said before, I think living in a staged home is easier than living in an unstaged house because you've packed up, you've decluttered, you've gotten it ready for market, for photos, and for showings. So just going through your checklist, which I do leave behind, and I think it's important for every stager to have at least something, even if you do a verbal consultation. I always leave a packet of information that's pre-printed information, articles I've written in that checklist as a reminder of what to do while you're selling.
That's great. I'm a big fan of checklists. I think checklists is a really good way to make sure that you remember everything that you need to do and then some.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And how about if the sellers have kids or pets? What are some of the additional tips that you may have for them?
Well, really, no one should be home for showing, kids or adults. If you've got pets, the best thing obviously would be to, you know, board them and keep them off site. But I know that's not possible, especially for cats. They tend to roam and, you know, you can't really contain them or they destroy rooms sometimes. But animals like dogs, especially if they're large and scary and they bark, oftentimes people, even the notes are in the information sheet to the realtors, if they hear a large dog barking and it doesn't sound like it's contained, they may not even come in for the showing. So I think it's important to at least contain the dog or dogs in a room or a crate if you haven't already trained them in one. A room or a laundry room or a neighbor, you know, ask them to come over. But if they're in the home and they're in a room or in a crate, I will say to close the door, take a picture of that room before, you know, if it's a bedroom or something, leave the picture on the outside of the door and also put a note that says, let's say I'm Maverick and I'm a Rottweiler and I may sound scary, but I'm behind this room and I'm more scared of you than you are of me. But don't go in here, you know, so warn people so they know that the animal's in that room. So take care of your pets because I think it's their job to take care of your home. And if they bit someone or did something, they're doing their job and it's not their fault. So it's our responsibility as a pet owner to make sure that they're safe and the people that are coming to see the home are safe.
And what are some of your favorite styling tips?
Well, simply like shop your own home. You know, before you go out and buy something else, you might have something in one room that can be used in another. Think of the rule of odd numbers. So odd numbers are better than even. So 1, 3, or 5 when styling a table or a dining room. Think of also repurposing items. I recently posted something on Instagram that showed 2 end tables that were put up together and they created a console under a flat screen TV. So repurpose, reuse, and think of simple design tips to help you stage your own home.
That's great. And then what are some of your favorite props that you use all the time and why are they your favorite?
Well, I use lots of mirrors. There's a few screens I love from Pier 1 too. They've been used for headboards. They've been used in a series on a wall. So large scale items are always important. Other favorite props that I like too are lamps. I think it's important to have matching lamps with the right scale, especially in a master bedroom. That's one of the things I'm always telling people to go out and buy because usually they don't have a lamp or they have mismatched lamps or they're way too small. And also new pillows, down-filled especially. If you've got a leather sofa, they won't slide. Pillows that aren't down-filled, the feather-filled, tend to slide off of those sofas. And in many cases, if you've had pillows for a long time, they look like pancakes. So it's worth going out and buying a few things like that.
Very cool. And then lastly, what is the one tip you'll give to homeowners who's going to live in the home while they're selling?
Well, remember that you want to sell your home. Whether or not it's for a good reason or not, you are in the business now of marketing a product, getting it on the market, and it's your largest investment, but it's also the buyer's biggest investment. So keep in mind that anything you do to help attract as many feet in your home and eyes in your space, the better the price and the faster the sale.
That's great. Thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it, especially so last minute.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Cindy. I'm glad to be here.
So that's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't left a review on iTunes, I really need you to do that. It's only going to take you less than a minute to leave a review, but it's really going to help us a lot to establish credibility for the show and also to be able to pitch to new guests to come on the show. So if you haven't done so, please do so. As usual, feel free to ask any questions on the show notes or in our private Facebook group. You can find the show notes by going to www.sagemore.com/podcast. That's it. Have a fantastic week and happy staging.